Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is the coastal town that they forgot to close down. Armageddon, come Armageddon, come Armageddon, come. Every day is like Sunday. Every day is silent and gray.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The English singer Morrissey became famous as the frontman for the Smiths, and since their acrimonious breakup in 1987, he's had a successful solo career. He certainly has lots of fans here in the States, but not surprisingly, he is a superstar of the first order back in the UK. What is surprising is that Morrissey is also hugely popular among the Mexican community on both sides of the Rio Grande. Camilo Lara, who records as the Mexican Institute of Sound, has put together a project he calls Mexracy, Mexico Goes Morrissey, where top Mexican and Mexican-American musicians play their versions of Morrissey songs. They premiered their show at the Barbican in London towards the end of April and are now bringing it to the Brooklyn Academy of Music. It's part of Radio Love Fest, the annual partnership between BAM and WNYC. And collaborating with us on the show this year are our colleagues at Latino USA. Their producer, Nadia Raymond, joins us here on Soundcheck to help us answer the burning question, why does Mexico love Morrissey? Nadia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So why does Mexico love Morrissey?
The thing is that I don't think there's a straight answer. No, there's not one thing that just really points to why Latinos love Morrissey. But there is kind of a parallelism with the melodrama that we hear in rancheras, boleros, a lot of the music that our parents played for us, and Morrissey's sort of overtly emotional, earnest lyrics. And in addition, I think it's because a lot of us were either kids from the 80s or kids whose parents or aunts and uncles, cousins are from the 80s. So growing up in houses where the English music being played was Depeche Mode, mm-hmm. And other, you know, kind of 80s UK rock, it made sense that Morrissey and the Smiths kind of wormed their way in there.
Yeah. Now, you did a little research in the community as to, you know, how this all came about. Tell us who you spoke to.
I did. So I spoke to two different people, Melissa Hidalgo, who is a writer. She's actually working on a book called Mozlandia, which is a book about the cultural productions that people make from Morrissey. So it's about what Latinos and Chicanos, specifically more Chicanos in the West Coast, are making as Morrissey fans. So she writes about the art, the plays, the cover bands, like all of these things, all these cultural productions that come out of just being people that like and listen to Morrissey. And I also spoke to Fernando Lyons, who has been a DJ for about 13 years, and he has DJed Mexican Morrissey parties here in New York for a while now. And both are, you know, diehard Morrissey fans, both come at it from different angles, but they both kind of said the same thing. You know, it's melodramatic music that kind of strikes a chord with the music that we grew up listening to, and at the same time, you know, it speaks to our kind of English side as well as our Spanish-speaking side all mixed into one.
The reason that keeps coming up is this idea of feeling melancholy and forlorn and longing for lost love and unrequited love. And I think culturally speaking, we can find connections to other kinds of Latino Mexican musics, right? Particularly with, say, rancheros from Mexico. And I think with that, with nostalgia, with longing, I think then we can extend that to thinking about what it means to be displaced as a people. What does it mean to be an immigrant that doesn't fit neither here nor there?
That's a pretty interesting. That's Melissa Hidalgo, the author. So Nadia, that seems to be a recurring theme there.
Yeah, there's a connection between, you know, feeling like outsiders in our own land as immigrants, as people from two cultures, and Morrissey sort of singing about that in a way that really relates to us. So Fernando Lyons, who was the DJ, also had a very similar feeling about sort of the nostalgia and also the melodrama. And even though it's a little cliched, I think it really speaks to him.
I think a lot of it has to do with my own personal sensitivity. And some of that I might be able to relate culturally to being Mexican. Like being more passionate in general about romantic ideas and feelings. Maybe a lot of that is passed on culturally through family members. I feel like my blood runs hot. And, you know, these are all cliches, but this is a real emotion. So when I hear this music, this is kind of what it conjures up.
So that's Fernando Lyons is his name. We're speaking with Nadia Raymond from Latino USA, who's been looking into this phenomenon of the Mexican Morrissey love affair that's been going on for over a decade now, and which will manifest itself on stage at the Brooklyn Academy of Music this Sunday evening, 7:30. It is the grand finale of the annual Radio Love Fest. Partnership between BAM and WNYC. Camilo Lara is sort of putting together a superstar Mexican band to play versions of Morrissey songs, including going back to the Smiths. And in this clip, Camilo and friends cover the old Smiths single called Ask. That's a little bit of Ask, Mexican style, from the ensemble known as Mexrissy, which is kind of a hard name to say and to spell, but kind of a portmanteau of Mexico and Morrissey. We're talking with Nadia Raymond of Latino USA about why Mexico loves Morrissey. And so we talked a little bit, Nadia, about something in the music, that kind of emotional quality to Morrissey's voice that, you know, has a kind of resonance with kids who grew up listening to rancheras and boleros, very melodramatic, very over-the-top, hyper-emotional kinds of songs.
And very much about heartbreak and displacement and things never being the same again after a certain moment. So,
yeah. But then there's another thing, and you've already touched on it, and I want to follow up on it, something beyond the music, something in the man himself in the context of being, in Morrissey's case, the son of Irish immigrants living in Thatcher's England in the 70s and 80s. That, too, seems to be a recurring theme in the people that you've spoken to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is what makes Morrissey particularly appealing to Latinos. I would say on a different or deeper level, I don't want to say deeper because everyone has their own connection to the musician, but on a different level than it does for people abroad, like for Mexicans or Central Americans and listen to it in their home country. Morrissey speaks very well about being an outsider in your own land, about sort of being an immigrant. And I think people forget that as an Irish guy, he was also an immigrant in England. And he also, you know, had parents from another place. And that sort of feeling of being singled out and kind of belonging but not really belonging. He's great at being an outsider and a little bit of an outcast. And I think that Latinos, for a long time, we felt like we are split. We belong here. We also belong home. We belong in the middle. And there aren't a lot of artists that really can channel that the way that he does.
But it's not just that, you know, as you say, lots of people have very deep responses to Morrissey's music.
Yeah.
Morrissey hasn't always given back to the audience, but he does to this one.
It's true. It's true. So a lot of the connection is also because when Morrissey came to the States, he came to L.A. It was also at a time when, you know, he wasn't receiving a lot of love in England. He came here. Audiences were going crazy. He happened to come to L.A. where just demographically, L.A. is a very strongly Latino city. So the audience was very strongly Latino. And he sort of embraced that rather than shying away from it.
Mm. And that's the author, Melissa Hidalgo. She talks pretty eloquently about Morrissey,
yeah,
kind of, you know, taking this audience kind of under his wing.
Other Chicanos and Mexicans who have written about Morrissey in this period will say that, you know, he was sort of irrelevant in his home country. And so a lot of that kind of pushed him to moving here in L.A., where, you know, here we were welcoming him with open arms. And he stayed here for 8 years. And a few years after that, he records You Are the Quarry, which was his first album in 7 years, and the first album that he records in Los Angeles. And on that album, you have the song First of the Gang to Die. You have the song Irish Blood, English Heart.
Irish blood, English heart, this I'm made of. There is no one on earth I'm afraid of.
And those two anthems, they speak to specifically the Chicano Latino community. And as an album that was viewed as his comeback album, I think that's when you start to get these questions like, why do Mexicans love Morrissey, right? Because it was sort of now out. Morrissey is very willing to speak about the vulnerability of being nerdy, of being poor, of being the children of immigrants, of not feeling like he belongs. All of that speaks to those of us who've ever felt that in any way, shape, or form, which is a lot of people, right? It's not just Latinos or Mexicans. I think what the difference is that Morrissey acknowledges us Latino fans, I think, in ways that he's not acknowledged other kinds of fans or his other fan populations, right? He'll speak directly to Chicano, Latino, Mexican audiences in ways that I don't think he speaks about other audiences.
Now, that's a really interesting point that Melissa Hidalgo makes in this conversation you had with her, Nadia.
Yeah, I mean, and she goes on to talk about how, you know, in You Are the Quarry, which is the record that Morrissey made after being in the States, he has First in the Gang to Die, where he makes a reference to a guy named Hector. I mean, there's just so many things. And she also talked about the tour that he did right after
the Oye Esteban.
The Oye Esteban tour, right? Which is, there's no, Oye Esteban, it's like, hey, Steve, you know.
Which is his first name. Steven is his first name.
Right, yeah. Right. But he's kind of taking that and making it Spanish.
Yes,
so,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I think in that way, without having to outwardly say, hey, listen, Chicano kids, I know you're listening to my stuff and I love you back. He just sort of subtly throws these things in there, and it's a way of showing the same kind of respect back.
Now, Nadia, you mentioned the song First in the Gang to Die, which on its surface, you know, sounds like any other Morrissey song. But when you get into the lyrics, I mean, it seems to be pretty clearly aimed at kids in East L.A. getting into trouble. Hector is clearly from that community. And this is a song that, to me, you mentioned the rancheras and the boleros before.
Yeah.
This, to me, sounds like a corrido.
It's absolutely a corrido. It's a Morrissey corrido. That's part of the appeal to it. And I think that's what we respond to in a way.
Explain what a corrido is.
A corrido is a type of it was a Mexican song that used to sort of talk about either things that were happening that were now being documented, so it was either forgotten history or it was about outlaws. So it's always about underdogs, outcasts, people that, you know, break the rules and a way to remember them easily.
Right. So the narco corridos, very popular now,
yes.
You know, about the drug lords and all that. But this is Morrissey's contribution to that great Mexican tradition.
And you have never been in love until you've seen the dawn rise behind the home for the blind. The pretty, petty things, and you're standing on our streets where Hector was the first of the gang with a gun in his hand and the first to do time, the first of the gang to die. The gang with a gun in his hand, and the first to do time, the first of the gang to die. Oh my.
A little bit of First in the Gang to Die from the album You Are the Quarry by Morrissey. An album that, as Nadia Raymond of Latino USA was just telling us, is something that kind of grows out of Morrissey's experience living in L.A. and seeing and feeling the love from the Chicano community of East L.A. And that, again, is part and parcel of the show called Mexracy, Mexico Goes Morrissey. The concert is subtitled Mexico Loves Morrissey. It's Sunday night at BAM, part of Radio Love Fest. Camilo Lara of the Mexican Institute of Sound and Sergio Mendoza of Calexico and a whole bunch of others doing arrangements and translations of the songs of Morrissey, which is an interesting idea, Nadia, because it's kind of turning the tables on English speakers who've long had the advantage of at least knowing what Morrissey is singing about. For the Mexican community, if you grew up in L.A., you grew up speaking English, it's not a problem. But, you know, in Mexico itself, this big community in Mexico City of Morrissey fans, they would have had to kind of feel the music before they actually knew what they were hearing.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the things that Fernando Lyons, the DJ, was talking to me about. He has gone to see Morrissey all over the world, and he was saying that he was surprised when he was in Mexico at the audience's reaction because they were into it, but they weren't as into it as he was expecting them to be.
I have seen Morrissey in Mexico. I actually got to see him in Guadalajara in probably 2000, maybe 5 or 4. And a lot of the Mexican fans, they weren't extremely familiar with the music as you would imagine. The intensity that I expected was more of a fantasy than an actual reality. I was probably the one going the most nuts in there. I think a lot of the connection has to do with like Mexican Americans more than people in actual Mexico. It's somewhat considered like outsider music. And when you feel a little bit out of place, you can relate to the way Morrissey portrays himself feeling out of place in his own country as well.
And so we come back, Nadia, to this idea of the outsider and being able to sense, even if you can't understand all the words, being able to sense that outsiderness somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's very true. In Morrissey, even the way that he sings, I think even if you don't really fully follow the lyrics, there's a certain, you know, lament to the way that he decides to use his voice. And I think that no one really does that if they're sort of like cheering about being on the inside. It's sort of like, you know, the lone wolf sitting on top of the hill, like howling at the moon. That's sort of how the sound comes across, I think.
So Mexico and Mexican Americans love Morrissey. You see lots of young men in L.A. with the hair, you know,
the pompadour,
the quiff. Yeah.
Yeah. Camilo Lara is the perfect person to do this. I mean, his covers have always turned everything on its head and sort of opened songs to different audiences.
They did this show at the Barbican in London late in April, and he told The Guardian that he was having real problems with some of the, like, suede head. What's the Spanish for suede head? You know, so there are things like that. But Camilo Lara and friends putting on this show for us at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on Sunday. Sunday evening at 7:30, it is the grand finale of our festival called Radio Love Fest, a collaboration between BAM and WNYC. And partnering with us for this show, Latino USA, we've been speaking with Nadia Raymond, a producer at Latino USA, who's been researching this whole thing. And we have somehow gotten all this way without you admitting to your own Maz obsession.
I think, you know, after talking to people that are truly obsessed with Morrissey, I don't think I quite am as much as I thought I was when I started doing this. But, I mean, it definitely speaks to me in the same way. And it was really fun to sort of, because I've never actually sat down and talked to people and been like, okay, why?
Yeah.
Until I started to do the research for this. And it was nice to know that the reasons why I sort of connected with Morrissey were the reasons that most people connected with Morrissey. I've always thought that to me it's like English language rancheras, and that always is why I liked it. And both, you know, Melissa and Fernando were both like, yeah, yeah, that's exactly how I felt about it. And it is about being an outsider. I think the most interesting thing that I learned is just, you know, hearing about his own immigrant experience and how that can translate without him openly talking about his immigrant experience. And that's an angle that I had never thought of. I'd always just sort of been like, well, yeah, I mean, he feels familiar to me. He feels like he can speak about things in a way that I can relate to. But I had never connected that it's maybe because, you know, we're both immigrants and he knows how to get that across.
Well, Nadia, thank you for doing all that research and coming up with some great stuff for us today. I'm going to give the last word, though, to Fernando. I'll see you Sunday at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
I think I like Rush and a Push. I really enjoy the build-up. There's that long, drawn-out like part where he's singing in the beginning, and it sort of fades in. And I think that's one of those songs that like really tends to like touch on all aspects of the music.
Time zone, and I missed my bed, and I soon came home. They said there's too much caffeine in your bloodstream, and a lack of real spice in your life. I said, leave me alone because I'm alright now. So
that does it for this podcast, but make sure to check out our archives of live performances, in-studio videos, exclusive music previews, and much more at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time.